Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals Podcast. I am your host, Harley. Everything is fine. Joining me on the third episode of the sitcom summer series is returning guest, host of Let's Jaws for a Minute and Jumpcast, it's Sarah Buddery. Sarah very kindly agreed to come back onto the show to talk to me about a series that landed only a few years ago on NBC and made its way over here in the UK on Netflix, and that is The Good Place. It's a show that explores the afterlife, philosophy, ethics, and the question, will the Jacksonville Jaguars ever win the Super Bowl? It's a wonderful show full of brilliant characters and a really positive message, and we get into all of that in this discussion. I should really give a spoiler warning on this discussion. I mean, I think that goes without saying with pretty much every episode that we're doing here, we're exploring these sitcoms as a whole across all of their series. But with this one, there's such a powerful twist in the first season that if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend that you do before listening to this episode. So without further ado, let's get to it. This is The Good Place with Sarah Buddery. Hello, Sarah, and welcome back to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for allowing me to come back. What a treat this is.
Of course. It's an absolute pleasure. So, when I put out the call for this series, the sitcom summer, you were one of the first people to come back. So really grateful for that. And I think you've picked one that is just absolutely fascinating, I think. It's kind of becoming a modern classic, and it's one of those few sitcoms that has like a high concept behind it, and that is The Good Place. So I want to know, when did you first see it and why did you choose to bring it to this particular series?
So I think I was a little bit late to the party in this, and that I didn't start watching it sort of when it first came to Netflix, which I think was in 2016 was when it started. So I think I started watching it when season two had finished, so I was then able to binge season one and season two, which is really great because season one ends in this huge cliffhanger. I don't know how I would have sort of held on waiting to sort of see the conclusion of that, but yeah, fortunately got to watch sort of the two series back to back and have just been hooked ever since. So yeah, I had many options for sitcoms that I could have brought to you. I think I gave you a list of about three. But this one I was sort of actually just recently in the middle of a rewatch of, so it sort of felt like nice. the best one to bring, as it was all sort of pretty fresh. And like you said, I think there's so much to talk about in this one that goes beyond just comedy, and I think that I've really grown an appreciation for this program over time. And I don't even know if on the first watch it really hit me just how good it was, but then I kept thinking about it afterwards, and a lot of the themes and the things that it explores, I think, were just so great that I just caught myself thinking of it every now and again, and obviously was keen to revisit it. So the rewatch that I just did is only the second time I've ever watched it all the way through, and just loved it even more. It's so wonderful.
It really is. And I think I'm in the same boat as you. I haven't actually rewatched it as of yet, but I definitely caught on a bit late, same as you. Like, I didn't realise what it was or it even existed. Mm. And it was only like when it was in the second season that I heard people raving about it. And as you say, I feel like this is one that, I mean, all of these conversations come with a spoiler warning, of course, but this is one I feel like, because as you say, it's got such a brilliant twist in that first season that I would say to anyone listening is, like, if you haven't watched it, at least go and watch season one.
Yeah.
Because it is brilliant. I mean, that kind of like the initial premise of this woman who's in supposedly heaven or the good place, as it's called, and she's not supposed to be there. It's kind of a fun thing in itself anyway. And they have a lot of great adventures and stuff with it in the first season. But to then take that and then just bang on the last minute of the last season and be like, oh yeah, no, this isn't the good place. You're actually in the bad place. It's like, what?
They're never going to call a train to take us to the bad place. They can't, because we're already here. This is the bad place.
Oh, man. I can't believe you figured it out. Oh, God. You ruined everything, you know that?
And yeah. Have you listened much to sort of behind the scenes stuff on it? Because most of the cast didn't know, apparently.
Yeah, I think I'd heard that or read that somewhere, that they managed to keep it a surprise even from them. And I think that's great. And also in this age as well of sort of like binge watching and everything just being available and spoiled on Twitter and social media, it was kind of this sleeper hit a little bit. Like, I don't think people really sort of knew what it was, despite it having like a pretty good cast. I think it was one of those word of mouth things where people just started talking about it and then its sort of popularity grew from there. But to be able to keep that twist hidden as well, and I think that when I watched it the first time, I had absolutely no idea. So I was like, what? Like, when that happened. it's impressive to keep something that big under wraps, I think. It's like, especially in this day and age where everything gets spoiled.
Yeah, 100%. And like yourself, like, going into season two, I was surprised I didn't know that going in, that someone had spoiled it, as you said. It was just like, oh. And what more so than that is, it's a twist that works.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clever, but it actually makes sense. Like, when it sort of all comes out, you're like, oh, that's genius. Mm. Oh, that's really, really clever. And then it leads into the next couple of seasons just being completely unpredictable. You know, it's not like your typical sitcom format. By that point, the whole thing's gone out the window, and you're just, I don't know about you, I was watching every episode thinking, what's going to happen next? Because every episode after that was just a completely different thing in itself.
Yeah, the twist really shakes up the whole concept of the show, because everything that you thought you knew, or all the breadcrumbs it was sort of leaving in the first season of where you thought it was gonna go, it then obviously took a completely different turn. And in fact, every season has a very different feel to it, and every season finale, it sort of ends on like a bit of a cliffhanger. So I did have that wait between like the end of season two to the end of season three, and then 3 to 4, where I was sort of like keen to find out what would happen next. But it's so refreshing for a sitcom to change up its format that well, because I think that the whole thing of a sitcom and why people love them and why they're so appealing is it's this sort of familiar cast of characters, it's tropes that we're used to, it's plot lines that we're used to, and it's all the sort of like the usual things, the capers and the hijinks that these characters get themselves into, and how do they get themselves out of it. But most sitcom episodes, you sort of see a resolution at the end of each episode, and they're quite singular, and they sort of sit on their own, and there's like through lines that run through the series, or, you know, the entire seasons. But this one, like, you want to watch the next episode immediately, because you know, one sort of or each season will sort of have something that is kind of like the main idea running through it, but it goes in so many different directions and twists and turns that you really want to keep coming back to see it every week. And it kind of, I mean, I'm sure there's other sitcoms as well that have sort of like changed up the formula a little bit, but this is one of my sort of go-tos to use as an example for how a program can take those things that are so familiar and still give us those things. We have, you know, the sort of the core six are in all 50 episodes. They have running jokes and great sort of like background gags and really sort of clever things that, you know, you see at the start and you're not sure if they mean anything, and then they come back and you sort of get a lot of resolution throughout rather than at the end of each episode. So it makes for a really satisfying watch, I found, on both watches.
Absolutely, yeah. And as you say, at the core of it, it's very, very funny. Even if you're kind of just not necessarily taking the bigger themes, which I think is a missed opportunity if you're ignoring those. But yeah, I've got the cast up here because the last episode I did, I made the same points. I keep the cast in front of me. but yeah, like you've got Kristen Bell, William Jackson Harper, Jamila Jamil, Darcy Carden, Manny. How do I say his last name? Jacinto, yeah. And of course Ted Danson. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's like it's a powerful cast straight off the bat. Like all six of those guys are incredible in their roles, and they're all very funny. There's lots of silly jokes and throwaway lines. And it's the kind of humor, because this is for anyone who doesn't know, this is run by Mike Schur, who is going to be a running theme I think in this series, because he's been at the helm of, or at least been involved in, a lot of kind of modern day classics, from like The Office to Parks and Rec was an episode we did, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I hope someone calls for, because that's a brilliant one as well, and this, and many more. You know, he's one of those guys that's very talented. He knows what's funny, but he also knows, I think he knows characters. He knows how to give you characters that you care about, because I mean, if we go through these characters bit by bit, I find like Eleanor Shellstrop, as played by Kristen Bell, is a really engaging protagonist, because she's kind of the worst. That's kind of the whole joke. You know, she calls herself Florida Trash, but she's also kind of a sweetheart, and the way she's played and the way she's written is you can see that there's someone inside who wants to be a better person, who wants to try. And that's kind of like the whole heart of the show.
Yeah, and she I think goes on the biggest journey as well, because obviously, I mean, it starts and ends with her, and she is the I say the constant throughout. Obviously we get the other characters coming in and out, but it is mostly about her and her sort of turning her life around even after she has died. So I think that she's a really fascinating character, because there's so many elements of her where you're like, she's not a very nice person, she's really selfish, she sort of does things that are questionable, or perhaps not the right thing to do. I think particularly when you see in the flashbacks of like how she was like before she died, you're like, wow, this person is really quite awful. But then the whole point of the program is like, no one is beyond redemption. No one is too bad to then sort of like change for good when they get the chance to actually sort of look back on their life and realize the things that they could have done better, or that, you know, making amends for the past and changing things that have happened. So the whole premise of the series really hinges on her, because we have to believe, like, right from the start, you know, that she the sort of journey she is going on of like she's trying to become a better person because she wants to convince them to let her stay, basically. That's when she still thinks that she is in the good place. But obviously, as it turns out, when we get the twist, things then sort of take on a different turn. But she definitely goes on, I think, the most life-altering journey of sort of like where she starts to where she ends up. And I just think she's such a great character. And Kristen Bell is so funny, just so naturally funny. Her line delivery is so wonderful. I just think she's so great to watch in this. And yeah, it's that character has to work. Otherwise, I think the whole thing falls apart, really.
See you in hell. You know what I just realized? I always say that when leaving a room, but right now, it's accurate. I will literally see all of you in hell.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those that I feel like her character and the whole central premise of the show kind of flips the sitcom genre on its head a little bit, because coming back to what something you were saying earlier, which is so true, is that a lot of sitcoms, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's kind of what made them work for so long, is they play on the familiar. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, the status quo is often what's kind of comforting about those shows, whereas this, the whole premise of this show is that this is somebody who is not going to be the same person that they were at the beginning as they are at the end, and neither is the show.
Yeah,
you know, the seasons, the episodes, all of it is just going, no, we're just gonna explore. And it's fascinating, like you say, and Kristen Bell is an amazing actress anyway, but her performance in this, I think, is probably one of her best, because it's one of those characters that's, like you say, very sharp and cynical and funny, but also, yeah, she's a real sweetheart. At the same time, like, you can see she's got those jagged edges, but what's fascinating to me about her character is that she's somebody who has all of these jagged edges and you kind of does something that I think is very relatable, and that she kind of just makes excuses for herself, you know, because trying to be better is hard, which is true. And anyone will tell you any kind of self-improvement is not easy, but it's not meant to be. And that's the lesson that she learns. It's like, no, it is hard. Trying to be a good person, you know, in any sense of the word, isn't an easy task, but it's doable. And it kind of comes with that optimism from like previous shows like Parks and Rec and The Office, where like I think Mike Short brings that optimism into this show and is like, no, it is possible. And she's the perfect conduit, I think, for that message, which is really lovely for a sitcom, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's she has to pull off like both sides, like, of Eleanor as well. Like, you have to believe that she is this like trash bag, as she calls herself, but then also she is a person capable of change with a good heart, really. And I think she absolutely nails that, and it's so good. It's such a great character with so many layers and nuances to it that I think are just fascinating to look at.
Absolutely. So, and that kind of leads me to the polar opposite and the kind of love interest, Chidi Anagonye, played by William Jackson Harper. Probably one of my favorite characters in a sitcom in the last like 20 years. He's amazing at playing someone that has manic breakdowns. Like, it's just incredible. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, very relatable character. I don't think I'm quite that bad, but you really get a sense of his anxieties, and he is just this person paralyzed by being able to make choices. Like, every single choice that he has to make, whether it's like what muffin to have or like what where to take his best friend for his stag do or something, like, it's every single decision he has to make is just something that completely cripples him.
Hey, getting close here. Just mulling the ethical ramifications of various soups.
Same old Chidi.
Not gonna come back for a fifth time.
Yeah, maybe that's smart.
And yet, he is, you know, this professor of ethics and philosophy. So he's clearly a good person. So I think that's a super interesting thing as well, because obviously the rug pull that it does at the end is actually that they're all in the bad place. So you're then sort of like working it through, and you're like, but Chidi is so good. Like, all he is good. He is just a good person. I'm sure he doesn't have a bad bone in his body. But then there's all of these things. And then as you learn more about him, it's like, you know, yes, he is a fundamentally good person, but he was incredibly frustrating to his friends and loved ones, and missed out on a lot of things in life because he would just be so crippled by decision making. And that is a flaw, and that is a bad thing to be as well. So it's so interesting to explore these characters in detail, and I think the show perfectly sort of like unravels itself as it goes along and gives us those little flashbacks and things that we see of the past. And we don't really know the full story of Chidi until quite late into series 4, when they sort of show him as a kid, and that, you know, he sat down and like gave his parents this lecture on why they should stay together, and it's quite sweet and everything else. But yeah, it's such a great character, and so well played by William Jackson Harper as well. And if I had to, this is going to be maybe controversial, but here we go. Mm-hmm. If I had to find a fault with this show, it's that I don't always buy into the romance between him and Eleanor.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just like the chemistry, just like it's not quite there. Like they play on the screen really, really well together. And the show sort of like hammers this point home, like they're soulmates, like regardless of how many times things get rebooted and reset and their memories get wiped, they always find each other and they always gravitate towards each other. And I think the resolution is very, very satisfying. I think their relationship is the strongest in the final season, but there's just moments along the way where it's like a little bit rocky and it doesn't feel like super natural, because they really are the absolute polar opposite. So naturally you've sort of set it up for this being quite a difficult romance to convince you of, but it's it redeems itself by the end, and I'm on board by the end, and I believe it by that point, but it takes me a little while to get there. I think that's, sorry, hopefully that's not too controversial.
No, I think that's fair enough. I mean, yeah. This is something that I think is a through line, was going to be a through line in a lot of these discussions, is, you know, a core element of any sitcom is romantic relationships, because it's just part of life. And so, of course, yeah, like you said, it's the pairings of certain couples, and that is very important for many reasons, for the dramatic and the comedic effect. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. A part of me, I kind of understand why they've put those two together. And I think it's because it's that thing of opposites attracting, in that, as you pointed out, Eleanor is somebody who isn't really a good person, but wants to be. She wants to learn, but she's never been shown. And Chidi's someone who is crippled by, you know, indecisiveness, basically, and being so afraid. Like, he wants to be more decisive and make decisions and not be worried about offending somebody or making the wrong choice. So it's like they both want to be more like each other. And it's kind of, I think that's what they're getting at, is that's why the two of them end up together, because they see what they want in the other person, which is kind of nice. And like you said, whether or not that works sometimes, I think that's a fair point. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But I think that's probably their reasoning behind it, I would imagine, from the writer's point of view. It makes for really interesting moments and some very emotional bits, I will say. There's that bit, I think, I don't remember which season it is, but there's a moment, isn't there, later on, where they're setting up an experiment. It gets very convoluted, this series. They're kind of... Oh, my printer's going off. Anyway, they basically end up stumbling into a problem, because there's this woman that Chidi had a relationship on Earth with, and he's like, I can't do it. You know, like, if she's here, I'm going to give this all away. So you're going to have to wipe my memory. And that means wiping out everything that they've been through. And it's kind of this really heart-wrenching moment. I'm not going to lie, it was a bit of a tearjerker when I saw it. I was like, oh no. And by that point, I think I was invested enough in their relationship to be like, oh, this really sucks.
Yeah, I think that was a turning point for me as well, I think, because when I watched that the first time around, I felt something in that moment. I was like, oh, he's going to have his memory wiped. He's going to forget everything about her. So that's the point where it starts to click more for me, I think. And actually, as you were talking, I was sort of thinking, obviously, something that sitcoms do so often is this kind of odd couple, opposites attract thing. And we get that in all of the pairings in this. I mean, even when Tahani and Jason are like a sort of item, like, they could not be more different. And then Jason and Janet as well, she is like the smartest not girl in the universe, who knows everything. And Jason, I don't know if he knows anything, but it's just like, it works because they're so different. But it's hard to create like chemistry unless it's just there. Sometimes you can't force it. But I do believe in their relationship by the end, and I am more emotionally invested in it, I think, as time goes on. And that moment you mentioned is a real good example of it getting you in the feels. And I think right towards the end as well, like the last two episodes, I just cry the entire way through, because it's so lovely.
Yeah, they are. It's got like happy tears, isn't it? Like it's emotional, but it's in a good way.
Yeah.
I need you to do me one last favor. Say goodbye to me now and leave before I wake up.
I don't normally cry at movies, but that one was pretty good.
You just reminded me, so looking at the cast, these other characters, Jamelia Jamil as Tahani Al-Jamil. I mean, what a revelation for someone who's not... I don't think she had any acting credits before this, or they were minimum. Like, she was a radio presenter. And I remember her. I remember when she popped up, I was like, oh, I remember her. She was on, like, BBC Radio back in the day. And she's absolutely amazing in this, isn't she? Yeah. She's so funny as this kind of socialite, shallow celebrity person.
I am obsessed with Tahani. I think she's my favorite character just because she's so completely unlike me, and I just find her so funny and such, again, just such a great, great performance. But it's like the constant name dropping and the just some of the things that she comes out with.
You know, I haven't been this upset since my good friend Taylor was rudely upstaged by my other friend Kanye, who was defending my best friend, Beyonce.
Because obviously she's had this very, like, privileged upbringing, and it's just, it's so funny. Her delivery is wonderful as well, because she just has this great, very, very posh, well-spoken British accent. So the other characters have a great time sort of, like, mimicking her and that sort of thing, which is always funny. But she is just, she's wonderful. And I think that I really feel her story as well. I think her backstory is one of the more interesting ones, because she's sort of like lived in the shadow of her sister and constantly looking for the parents' approval and just never getting it. And that's what she wants. She is, you know, she is shallow and vain and sort of celebrity obsessed and obsessed with status and everything else. But what she, all she, that's all a mask really for what she really wants, which is like the approval and love of her parents, and to sort of feel like she is good enough. And there's just something really honest in that. I mean, none of these characters, I think what we're sort of establishing here as we're talking about it, is none of these characters are what they appear on the surface.
Yes. Yeah.
And this show just does a really great job of helping us get to know these characters in a way that feels very real and authentic. And yeah, I'd forgotten like what happens to Tahani. I knew it's sort of like which one of them's decided to sort of like pass through the door at the end, and I was like, I can't remember what happens to her, but I'm so happy with her resolution. I think like where she ends up in like the final two episodes, where she is basically just ticking off this list and like learning everything. She has passed every skill she could possibly do, mastered everything. So she's sort of got like nothing else to accomplish. And then she becomes like one of the architects and sort of wants to make something even more of herself. And I like that. I like that it didn't sort of go down the route of, well, they just all, you know, sort of pass on finally at the end. I like to think of her still just, you know, accomplishing great things and doing great things even after the show. So I would watch a Tahani spin-off as well. I just want to speak that out into the universe.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's just incredible. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's, you're absolutely right. It is that through line of the show of, you know, not being deceived by appearances. And I think it's nice because she's someone on the surface it's very easy to be irritated by, because like you said, she's so shallow and vain and just name drops people all the time, and you're just kind of like, oh, get over yourself. But it's funny that they then turn that and they kind of explore it. And like you said, at the core of it, you're like, oh, she's just an insecure person. Mm. And you're like, well, who of us can't relate to that?
Yeah.
Not like you said, that feeling of not feeling good enough. I think all of us at some point or another have experienced that. And of course, the writers have a great deal of fun in turning that up to 11, so to speak, in like the flashbacks of her sister as like literally the golden child of the family. And it doesn't matter how much money Tahani raises for charity or what she does next. It's always like, well, your sister's done this.
Yeah.
And I think, and her death is kind of, when you find out how she died on Earth, is kind of tragically hilarious.
Yeah. Like crushed like, by a statue of her sister, isn't she? And then
yeah,
her reaction is like, I died in Cleveland. So good.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of wonderful and very, very funny. But it's like, like you said, you realize, oh, okay, that's what she's driven by. And it's something that, it's just very honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very honest character. And like you said, all of them, I think, have great arcs as the show goes on anyway.
Mm.
But like you said, hers is very satisfying, that she kind of becomes like almost the most selfless being in the universe, essentially, like just giving herself completely to help others as time goes on is really lovely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that for her.
Yeah, it's perfect. The next one on my list is Manny Jacinto, I'm going to struggle with his name, apologies, playing as Jason Mendoza, possibly one of my favourite idiots on screen ever. Just his delivery of some of the lines they give him are wonderful. And I mean, I've just finished with the edit for Parks and Rec, and there's a ton of clips in that, and there's going to be a ton of clips in this, and I could just do a supercut of him with all of his weird things that he has this ability to say things that it's just like, it's the confidence he says it with, I think, is genius. He just says the dumbest things you've ever heard, but he says it with such confidence, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful character.
We need some place that we can talk in private.
I agree. Let me show you my butthole.
What?
This is my butthole. It's just like a hole where me and my buds can hang out.
Oh, butthole. Okay, now I get it.
Yeah, on my first watch of this, I wasn't a big fan of Jason. I think I just found him quite irritating. I couldn't really pinpoint why or how or the reason for that. But then when I watched it the second time, I think I just appreciated him so much more, because he is just this lovable idiot, and that's not, you know, being harsh to say that he is. I'm sure the actor in real life, lovely fellow, probably very, very smart, but he plays an idiot very, very well. He just comes out with incredibly dumb things, and I think the show actually needs a character like Jason, because it deals with some really heavy, weighty things. I mean, it is dealing with the afterlife, good and evil, can a person change, morality, ethics, philosophy, like a lot of sort of high concept things that it deals with. And sometimes it just needs this lovable idiot from Florida to say something stupid to sort of bring you that laugh when you've been dealing with some sort of really heavy stuff within the program. But it never feels cheap. It never sort of feels like they're just going for the quick and easy laugh by being like, oh well, we'll just have Jason say something stupid. Like, it always feels like it comes at the right time. And I find his relationship with Janet so sweet. Again, it's so just shouldn't work on paper, but it really does. And their sort of like final parting in like the last few episodes is so brilliant as well. He's sort of like, he's hidden away for like goodness knows how long, because he was trying to give Janet a necklace and then he lost it, and she thinks that he has like passed through the door or something, and then Janet comes back and then Jason is just like behind a tree, like
yeah,
like how long was he there for?
I know. And it's like, it's kind of, this show has a bit of a Groundhog Day vibe about it, because it's, by the time they've gone through everything in this show, it's probably been eons of time, thousands of years, but he's the one character that doesn't seem to get any smarter as the show goes on.
He has moments.
Which is kind of wonderful. Yeah.
He's just this, he's so pure, and obviously he does bad things, which is how he ends up in the bad place in the first place. But he doesn't change at all. And I think actually what we're sort of saying at the start is that what people like about sitcoms is the familiarity and the consistency, and Jason is kind of like the consistency in this show. Like, he is pretty much the same at start to how he is at the finish. He has become a better person, like they all have, but him in himself and his personality, he has not really changed at all. And I think that's wonderful. He's like the person you can rely on throughout this series to just say that wonderful thing that is so out of place and so inappropriate and so dumb, but so, so funny. I can't even think of like my favorite Jason bit, because there's so many, but I love his just unwavering support of the Jacksonville Jaguars. As a football fan myself, I'm like, I get it. And he's just so committed to them. He just fully believes that they are going to be amazing, that they will win a Super Bowl one day. And I'm sorry, Jason, I don't think they're ever going to win a Super Bowl, but he believes.
I know, I love it. He does. I think I heard somewhere on a behind the scenes thing that, yeah, that was like a fun gag for the writers. They would just pick a team that like one of the worst and just have him wholeheartedly believe in it.
I'll tell you what I want to know right now before we go any further. did the Jacksonville Jaguars win the Super Bowl last year?
Oh, you're serious? No.
Will they ever win the Super Bowl?
Jason, I can't predict the future. But no, they won't.
Even, I'm pretty sure his death, doesn't he die in a safe? Like, he tries to rob somewhere, so he does, like, tries to do the Trojan horse thing in a mm-hmm. safe and just suffocates.
Yeah, just, because...
Like, it's dark, but it's very funny.
He, like, yeah, they're trying to, like, break into a taco restaurant or something, or, like, a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, something.
And he's in a safe, so they're going to take the safe into the restaurant, and then he will come out of the safe and then steal all of the money in the restaurant or something. But the equipment that he takes into the safe with him to try and help him to breathe is a snorkel, but he just has the snorkel in his mouth. It doesn't
That's right.
lead to an air hole or anything in the safe there. It's it's airtight, but he's like, I've got this snorkel, it's gonna be fine. Oh, I love him.
Oh, it's amazing. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good. But like you said, he's one of those characters that's fascinating because it's like, as you say, he does bad things, like he's trying to commit a crime in that sense. But he's just one of those people that just needs to be shown a better way. You know, and it's evident in the show as it goes on, like when he's shown a better way, he's fine with it. He just goes with it. He's like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't give too much thought about it. So he's like, again, it's another really interesting character, but definitely some of the biggest laughs. Come from him and just the stuff he comes out with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've led me on nicely actually to Darcy Carden's character Janet, the not girl, the just I think the MVP of the show. I mean, they're all brilliant, but I kind of feel like her character is just remarkable as this kind of all-knowing supercomputer person, and she has some incredible lines and gags and complicated stuff going on. I mean, yeah, talk to me about Janet.
I'm now changing my mind. I'm like, is Tahani or Janet my favorite? I think it would probably be
I know
yeah, tied for first maybe, because I love them both. But Janet is the sort of like Siri personified almost, or it's this sort of AI system come to life that can do anything and be anything and knows everything. And that could feel like it would be one-dimensional. Like, on paper, it sounds like quite a one-dimensional character. Like, how interesting can a character be that knows everything and can do anything? But Darcy Carden, in her performance, just adds so much to that character. And she goes on a journey as well. And we see her start to become more human. She starts to feel more. We see her have her heart broken, and then she makes herself a rebound boyfriend in the form of the wonderful Derek, played by Jason Mantzoukas. So I have to mention, because he's so good. So ridiculous.
You must be Michael. Janet's made a lot of talk into my ear holes about you. Michael, Clykel.
Janet, you can't make a person.
I know, but I did, though. Eleanor said that to forget about Jason, I should create a rebound guy.
Derek.
So I made one. Hi. Derek.
Oh, I'm her boyfriend, and she made me.
He's so nice.
She has, like, various, like, other, like, forms. Like, she is not the only Janet. She is this particular neighborhood's Janet, but there are these bunch of other Janets, and we sort of see those throughout as well, but it's all the same actress playing them. So we see Bad Place Janet, who is just this, like, farting, always on her phone, really just kind of like gross and rude and mean version of Janet. So that's incredibly fun. There's then like the medium Janet or something, who is just like really bland and no emotion, no change of tone or anything. And then I think that one of the, in fact, maybe my favorite episode of the entire show is the one called Janet's, which is when they all end up in Janet's void, and we see Janet versions of all the other characters. If no one has ever watched this show, sorry, we've spoiled the whole thing, and also it's really hard to explain.
I think I'm with you there. That's now coming back to me. Yeah, that was when I was like, oh, she's the MVP of the show. Like, to play all the other characters, and she nails them. She nails every single one of them.
Her Chidi is so good.
It's so spot on. So to do that whilst as playing, mm-hmm. yeah, playing all the other characters, you know, whilst also playing Janet, it's just, it boggles my mind as an acting choice. It's like, that's remarkable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely remarkable. And it's very funny.
Yeah.
One of my absolute favorite recurring gags is when they have to reboot Janet. And isn't it when they go to that big button on the beach and she does this whole bit about, like, you know, I can't feel any pain. I'm not going to die. But at the same time, like, I will try and convince you that, you know, that's not true because I don't want you to reboot me. And it just leads to this hilarious thing of them going to press the button and then her just like screaming and pleading for her life. And then like how all the characters react to some of them are freaking out when she does it because she does it so well. And then when she does reboot, she just face plants the sand. And I was like, fair play to Darcy because she looks like she properly drops face first into the beach, which I imagine if you're doing that all day for takes and takes must be quite painful.
Yeah, sore face by the end of it, I think. But yeah. she's so wonderful, and she really has to change her emotion and her mood like on a dime as well, because she has to do so much. She is this sort of all-knowing being, but to be able to change her performance in such subtle and brilliant ways and show a whole range of emotions and yet be believable as this sort of AI robot thing, I think it's just incredible. I don't know if she won awards for her performance, but I hope she did. And if not, why not? Because that Janet's episode alone, I think, is evidence enough of how incredible she is as an actress, and very, very funny, but also just a great performer. It's really a masterclass in imitating, and it's not an easy thing to do as well, because those characters have such unique quirks and ways of talking and things that they do with their body. And it's like, it's quite trippy when you watch that episode, because you're like, oh my goodness, she is William Jackson Harper as Chidi. This is so strange. I know I'm watching her, but yet I'm seeing this. And her sort of like entire body just seems to like change. Like when she is being Tahani, she sort of like is, you know, stands up straight in the sort of very like prim and proper way that Tahani does. And it's just so glorious. And a surprisingly sweet relationship between her and Michael as well, I think is really nice, like particularly by the end of it. That was another moment that like really got me in the feels with those two. And I think, yeah, Darcy Carden just absolutely sells it. The definite MVP. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, she does the thing that I love. People in the, you know, people who've been listening to the show will know that I'm a big fan of sci-fi and a big fan of AI, and particularly the whole like AI's becoming human is always fascinating to me. So yeah, the fact she does that with such amazing kind of pathos and great comedic chops at the same time, it's like, yeah, like you said, give her all the awards. Absolutely brilliant. And you just mentioned one of the other main characters, of course, Michael, played by the legend in comedy that is Ted Danson. This guy, I mean, I know he's good anyway, but I feel like this is a whole other thing for him. Like, he's just absolutely brilliant in this.
I just want to have a little chat about your progress. In the last homework assignment, I asked you to examine the ethics of Les Miserables, in which a man steals a loaf of bread to feed his starving family. Would you please read your first paragraph? Yeah.
Everyone in this story sucks and belongs in the bad place. The thief is bad, the officer chasing him is bad, all the whiny prostitutes are bad, plus they're all French, so they're going to the bad place automatically.
Do you see how you're already off topic?
Chidi, I've been around a long time, like all of it. But I know for a fact that if you steal a loaf of bread, it's a negative 17 points. 20 if it's a baguette, because that makes you more French.
Yeah, and this is a hard character as well. This, we're saying sort of Eleanor goes on a journey. I mean, Michael goes on a journey that is kind of just as crazy, because he is the architect of the bad place, as we find out at the end of the the end of the first season, it isn't really the good place, it's the bad place. So he has to be believable as a demon, basically. I think he's like a fire demon underneath like a human skin or something, which is funny in itself. But then he changes as well, and he originally, I mean, his intention is to torture these humans and to torture them by making them believe that they are in the good place. So it's twisted, like it really is. And I think it's in the second season where we see him just like rebooting constantly, just like trying to get it right. Yeah. Which is very, very funny. There's some attempts where he just like, he blows it within like seconds or something, and other ones last for like several days, weeks, months, whatever it is. But he's so clearly committed to getting this absolutely right. And by the end of it, he is just this like lovely, wonderful person who really believes in these humans, and still perhaps does some questionable things and that along the way. But he really fundamentally believes that he has like a complete change of heart, basically, like a complete 180. He's like, these people are not bad and they can change. And he sort of sees the error of his ways and then becomes, well, yeah, where he ends up as well, I think is wonderful. Because he's sort of like done everything, seen everything that he can do, in the afterlife, but has never like got to experience being human. And that's where he ends up. Which I think is so wonderful, because then when he eventually the human Michael passes, he would then eventually get the chance to pass the test and go through the afterlife properly like the rest of them have. So sort of ready to complete his journey, he becomes human, which I think is so wonderful. It's just this show just knows what to do with these characters. All of them have like the perfect resolution, and it's really difficult, I think, to nail that when you've got sort of six pretty core characters and they are in it start to finish, first episode to last episode. It's to make the landing with all six of those characters, I think, is really commendable. And yeah, Michael has a great journey, and Ted Danson plays him so well. Like when he does that evil little laugh, that little cackle, it's so good, and yet he's also as believable as this really like lovely old man who just wants the best for these humans. So he, like Eleanor, kind of like nails that, like both sides of the coin of this character.
Absolutely. And that coming to what you said just a minute ago, I mean, in terms of endings, you're right that it's one of those, I feel like, you know, endings are hard for a lot of shows, but I feel like this is one of those sitcoms where it has the right ending.
Absolutely.
for each character. And you know, funny, again, I was talking about Parks and Rec not that long ago with previous guest Claire, and that has quite a nice wrap up for everybody. And it's, I feel like Michael Shore's had a bit of a run up at it, and it seems like in this episode, in this series rather, he's completely understood where all the characters are, and like you said, he sort of tries to give them a meaningful send off for each one, which I think is really cool. And it's, yeah, it just makes it that much more enjoyable, because there's nothing more frustrating when you're watching characters go through all this journey, you get invested, and there's just a really pants ending, and you're like, oh
yeah,
that last few episodes. Whereas this, you don't get that, you kind of go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And there's a final resolution for all of the characters as well. And I think something that sitcoms can do often is run for too long or not know when to end, and they get sort of less and less funny over time. Actually, one of my other options for talking about was going to be New Girl, which I rewatched again very, very recently. I absolutely hated the final season of that, because they sort of came,
I'm with you.
Yeah, they came back for like half a season just to sort of give these characters some resolution, and I didn't need it and I didn't want it, and nothing felt resolved by the end of it. Whereas this, it just feels so complete. It's a lovely, quick, short series to watch, like start to finish, 1 to 4, just all the way through, and you feel like you've watched a complete storyline rather than something that would go on and on. And there are characters in this who would continue and do continue, like after the credits roll, and we can imagine ourselves and fill in those gaps what happens, but all of them end up in a place that is satisfactory. And it's not just as simple as, well, they all walked through the door and passed to the sort of, you know, final stage or whatever. Like, each one of them has a journey and ends in a perfect way for that character. Endings are hard, like you said, not even just comedies, like anything, to sort of decide the right point for it to end, because you've got people who love these shows and who are like, I could watch 20 seasons of this, but there is no way that this could have run for that many seasons. And I think even a fifth would have been too much, because it just, each season has such a complete arc, and I don't know what else they could have done with it without dragging it out further. So
no, same. I mean, by the end of it, they basically have rewritten the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you can't get bigger than that, can you? Like you said, it was a natural place for it to kind of come to an end. But yeah, I mean, it's 50 episodes. That's pretty good innings, I'd say. It's short and sweet. And like you said, that's great for rewatch value. You can just blitz through that in a weekend. Some people could probably mash
short episodes as well. I love a 20-minute. That captures my attention immediately. If I see something as like an hour, I'm like, oh, okay, bit of a commitment. 20 minutes, I'm like, we're gonna be friends here.
Absolutely, it's perfect. I just wanted to talk about a couple of the other kind of recurring characters. I just spotted on here Mark Evan Jackson as Sean. I love that man,
so evil.
He's got great dry delivery, and in this he's used to perfection. There's a clip that I'll put in here, and it revolves around butthole spiders, and just it's such a childish joke, but the way he delivers it, it makes me cackle every time I hear it. And he does that throughout, like all these weird torture things that he's just throwing out, and he just says them with such perfect, like, deadpan delivery. And it's really, really funny.
Oh, sounds like everything's going well back there too.
We're trying out the new butthole spiders.
Huh?
They're enormous.
Yeah, I think like one of the like the things they do to torture people in the bad place is like penis flattening or something, and it always makes me laugh whenever they say it. And I think so much of that is in Mark Evan Jackson's delivery, because they're saying a funny line like in a funny way, and I think it would still get a laugh, but there's him saying it in that complete like monotone, deadpan, very serious way that is just even funnier. I think that the more ridiculous something is, if it can be played in a way that is so serious and so deadpan, it just makes it like 100 times funnier. And I think he's such a good character, and he's not in it tons. He sort of comes into it a lot more later, but the way he and Ted Danson sort of play off of each other, I think, is wonderful as well, because they have this sort of rivalry between them of initially like who is the most evil, and Sean doesn't sort of really believe that Michael can really pull off this experiment that he tries in the first series. But yeah, wonderful. He always just plays such a, I don't know, I've seen Mark Evan Jackson in other things, and he always just seems to play like a bit of a nasty character, but he does it so well. When you can play someone evil that well, then why not? If he's typecast, then I don't care, because he's really good at it, and he's very, very funny as well, like surprisingly so. Yeah. I think
absolutely. It's the perfect foil for kind of Michael's journey and arc, and like I said, just some of the best jokes and just the best delivery. You mentioned Jason Manzoukas as early as Derek, which I love. I mean, he's got a manic energy that he brings to everything.
Yeah.
And it's perfect for this weird thing that Janet makes just out of nowhere to try and make Jason jealous. And it's very, very funny. Like, he's only in it for, like, I think I've got to hear 9 episodes. He's hardly in it at all, but every time he pops up, again, just given lots of random gibberish to say, and just says it with perfect delivery every time.
Yeah, the wind chimes, that's a particular bit that jumps out to me, where his Yeah, I don't need to say it. if you know, you know.
I'll be putting that clip in, don't worry.
Please, yeah.
This is everything we ever wanted.
Speaking of people getting what they want, I really hope Mindy liked the present we sent her. Who are you?
Derek.
Thanks for helping us all those times we showed up. To repay you, here's a willing sex robot and two duffel bags full of cocaine.
There are wind chimes where my ding-dong should be.
I can work with that.
All right!
And also, in the, yeah. like, the... If it's not the final episode, then it's close to the end as well, where he is just this, like, all-knowing being that is made of time and space itself, because... Mindy, who he sort of belongs to now, I guess. She has just rebooted him so many times that he is now just, because what the whole thing is, when they get rebooted, they sort of come back stronger or more developed than they were previously. And she has obviously rebooted him so many times that he now just is like time and space.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, what a funny twist on that as well. Like, you don't see it coming. You're kind of like, oh, okay.
Oh, Derek.
Yeah, Mindy St. Clair as well, like an interesting character. Again, only in it for a few episodes, played by Meribeth Monroe, I've got here. An interesting character, because she's the one you meet where she's the medium person, isn't she? Where, like, she's not a good person, because she's, like, this coke-headed lawyer, but she raises a lot of money, and that money helps a lot of people, and so, like, she ends up in this weird middle ground where she's not quite good but she's not quite bad. And again, very funny, very interesting premise, and just an interesting little character. A bit creepy though. She does have a lot of creepy lines.
Yeah, a little bit. It's when it introduces the idea of the medium place, I think is pretty good, because I think it's something that Eleanor says, like, maybe in the first season, where she's like, why is there just a good place and a bad place? Why is there not a medium place? And then when you actually get to see it, it's just this kind of, like, place in the middle of nowhere where things are all just a bit, like, nothing. But again, like, Mindy St. Clair is a character who we don't see in a ton of episodes, but even she gets a resolution. Like, so many of these characters, like, you know, like we just said, we see Derek become this being outside of existence itself, and Mindy St. Clair isn't in half as many episodes as the sort of the core cast are, but even she gets a chance to sort of, like, to better herself and to improve as well. And it's just like, it cares so much about all of these characters, like even the ones who are just in a couple of episodes, where the sort of the fan favorite characters, I think obviously there's some who just we see in passing who, you know, we presume are alive and well, dead and well, I guess, instead of alive and well. But we don't sort of get like a final resolution for them, but we still see something of them later, which I think is a lovely touch. So yeah
exactly. And it's brilliant. I mean, like, I'm just looking at some of these other characters here, and like, yeah, all of these like the judge played by Maya Rudolph, who's very, very funny.
Love her.
Simone Garnett, who's kind of like the sort of love rival, I guess, Farina and Chidi, played by Kirby Howell-Baptiste. Like, I'm pretty sure she gets a resolution. Like, all of these characters, like you said, they all come back in one form or another.
Yeah.
And it's quite rare. It's quite rare you see that in a sitcom, really, that they sort of everybody gets a bit of an arc.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like busy and cluttered. Like, it obviously gives the most amount of time and resolution to the core characters, and then sort of like trickling down a bit further to those who are in more episodes than most, but they're not quite like the core six, like Sean, like Vicky, Judge, and a couple of others as well. But then it sort of like goes down to that next layer down with like the Mindy's and the Derek's and Brent as well, who is just like a horrible character, but even he gets like something as well. And it's so refreshing. It's so nice to see that, because I think so many sitcoms just focus on the core characters, and you get this sort of conveyor belt of other characters coming in and out, but you don't get resolutions for those characters in the same way that you get in this. And I just think it's so refreshing, and just another reason why this show is so different to lots of others out there.
Absolutely. And I just think, yeah, like you said, the central message of it, sort of like we're saying at the start, is it's nice because it's not telling you not to, you know, try and self-improve and be a better person, but it's telling you to be patient, essentially, and it will take time. And one episode I think that's kind of sums all of that up so well, and it has one of my favourite cameos because he's one of my favourite actors, is Michael McKean as Doug Fawcett, and it's a great payoff of a joke that's thrown away. It's like a throwaway line at the beginning of the first episode where they're like, oh yeah, this one guy who got high one time as a teenager, like, he got pretty close to sussing out what the afterlife is actually like. And they have a picture of him in the background, and you actually meet him, and he's played by Michael McKean, which is a great cameo. He's a very, very good actor, very obviously Spinal Tap and Better Call Saul and all that stuff.
So, these are some of my 71 adopted dogs and wolves.
You've rescued every stray animal that's ever wandered onto your property?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I've been mauled several times. This little guy here might look innocent, but boy, he goes right for the squeaker, if you know what I mean.
But it hit the whole point of his episode is he's someone who, again, is very similar to Chidi. He's, like, paralyzed. Like, his entire life is kind of this weird dichotomy of constantly being in fear and trying to do what he thinks is the right and tick boxes. And it's like, well, that's not life. It's not that simple, you know, and principles are different to rules. And that's kind of like the whole heart of the show, I think. And it's very clever. Again, it's something that it's rare. Again, like we're saying really at the beginning, it's rare to find a sitcom which makes you think, that you come away kind of being like, yeah, maybe I should try this, or I should learn a bit more about how to be a better person.
Yeah. And it sort of switches it from that point scoring thing, which you think it's going to be in the start, and it is that for a little while, that it's all about how many points you get. And we sort of talk about the revelation of the end of the first season, but I can't remember at what point it comes. But then we get a sort of a lesser revelation further into the series, when it is sort of revealed that actually no human has got into the good place in something like 500 years or something. And because the point scoring thing just didn't work, they'd sort of set this, like, you know, this blueprint of like, well, doing this thing equals this many points, but it didn't take into account the complexity. You know, sometimes, like, I don't know, poor example, but a little white lie or something is actually like the kinder thing to do in some situations. And it's like, you couldn't just say, well, lying equals minus 1,000 points, because it completely depends on the scenario and context and everything else that is happening, and so many other factors that are impossible to put points or scores or numbers on. And each person kind of has to be assessed individually. There isn't just this blueprint of like how to be a good human, and the character of Doug has sort of like followed that blueprint like to the letter. Like, these, he figured it out on this like acid trip or whatever, and like, these are the things that you have to do in order to get to the good place. But even he has got it wrong. No one has got it right, sort of thing, because it's not factoring in how complex human decisions and emotions are and can be. And it's not as black and white as like, this is good, this is bad. And it's a lot to grapple with sometimes, I think, the stuff in this show, but I'm so glad that it goes to those places, as well as being incredibly funny, because it does give you a lot to chew over. Like you said, you sort of come out of it at the end and you're like, maybe I should try and be a better person. And these people, the main four, they get various opportunities throughout to sort of change their behavior, to do things differently, and they realize it's not just about, you know, them in themselves doing things better. You know, Eleanor holds a door open for loads of people and expects her points to just rack up, and they don't, because she's doing it for the wrong reason. She's doing it for herself. She's not doing it because she genuinely wants to help people. And it sort of becomes a bit deeper in the sort of the third and fourth season, with the characters helping other people. You know, they've sort of reached the place where they're like, well, we're never going to make it to the good place, but what we can do is help other people improve their lives, and we see some resolutions between like Eleanor and her mum and Tahani and her sister as well, in just sort of like, well, we can't change things for ourselves, but what we can do is change things for other people. And that's when it sort of gets into the territory of changing the system and making changes so that more people will be able to qualify. And it's not as sort of cut and dry as it was before, where if you didn't do enough on Earth, then, you know, that was it. It was, you know, decision made, you're in the bad place or whatever. And it crams all of that in to like 20-minute episodes and only 50 episodes. And there's a bunch that we haven't like got into as well, because there's just so much. But yeah, to have that in a sitcom is like pretty mind-blowing, really.
Yeah, it really, really is. And it, like you said, it takes all these ideas. But what I like about it is it doesn't try to give you answers. It doesn't try to sort of force, you know, one way of thinking down your throat kind of thing. It's just sort of, yeah, it's very laid back and kind of, well, sometimes there isn't an answer. And I remember one episode, which is, it's kind of hilarious and grim, when they do the famous train test about,
problem,
you know, if there's someone on a track. The trolley problem, that's it. And it's brutal, but it's very funny. But it kind of brings the point that, like, and the whole point of that question, if you ever get asked that question, is that there is no easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole point of it, is to get, it gets you to think about who you are as a person and all this stuff, which is, like I say, very deep for a comedy to kind of go into. But it's lovely. Again, I encourage people to watch it, because it doesn't beat you over the head with philosophy. It's more just kind of like, here's some things to think about. And here's some journeys that characters go on. And like you said, the overall arcing theme of it is you can be better. You can get better. In whatever form that takes is up to you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that nails it, basically. It's
a very lovely thing for a sitcom to say, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah. No one is so bad that they can't change. And everyone sort of gets their second chance, or gets their second shot at things, and learns something about themselves and other people along the way as well, which is so nice. And just seeing that relationship develop between the main group as well is so great, to sort of see how they're very focused on themselves in the beginning, but over time they sort of become a lot more concerned with each other. And it might be in, I think, the penultimate episode in series 4, where they sort of do like fake funerals for each other, which sounds a bit morbid.
Yeah, that's right.
But it ends up being like one of the like lovelier episodes, because they get the chance to like say nice things about the person whilst they're there and can hear. And it's something that people often say is like, don't wait for someone's funeral to say something nice about them. Don't sort of like, you know, stand up there when it's too late and say this person was amazing, they did all these great things. You have to do those things, say those things to people whilst they're still there. And obviously, like, we'll get into the complexities of the fact that these people are actually dead and in the afterlife, but it's a good message for us, I think, to you know, about thinking of other people, putting other people before yourself, and just doing nice things for other people and saying nice things to other people as well, I think is such a lovely message to take away from it.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you want to add? Or I thought you've covered a lot of ground with this sitcom.
Yeah, so much. And there is honestly so much that we could still get into, but it's to save me being here for like another 3 hours, I think that's a nice place to leave it.
Absolutely. And the good news is it's on Netflix, the whole thing, so if people are listening and they think, yeah, I'm gonna give it a go, sorry we spoiled it, but B, give it a go anyway,
still great
if you haven't already. Yeah, so Sarah, I guess to kind of take us home, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I am at Sarah Buddery. And I plug the podcast as well. Is that
yeah,
okay?
Go for it. Plug away.
Lovely.
Plug
away. Always have to ask. You can listen to me on two podcasts currently, talking about two of the things I love most in life, which is Disney and Jaws. So I do, I'm currently doing a Disney classic series for Jumpcast. We are 50 something films in, so we are on the home stretch, but plenty of content to go back and listen to. if you would like, and also co-host a podcast called Let's Jaws for a Minute with the wonderful MJ Smith. We are going through Jaws, the greatest film ever made, minute by minute or thereabouts. And Harley, you've been on. You were a wonderful guest, and we've got you coming back soon. That's true. As well. So very excited about that.
Yes, and I made some big, big promises, which I am regretting to the But it's, yeah, involving songs, if anyone's wondering. Oh. Yeah, go and listen to that episode. I'm very nearly there on that one. I'll just say much. Goodness. But anyway.
So excited.
Oh, my goodness. But yes, people should go and listen to that, because I mean, last time you were on here, you talked all about Disney animation. Mm-hmm. And so I plugged and would encourage anyone to go and listen to the Jumpcast series that you're doing with Barry, because it's amazing. The detail you guys go into is wonderful. And yeah, last time I spoke to you, you were in the 80s, and now you're in the, you know, 2010s,
yeah,
as of time of recording, which is crazy. So you've covered a lot of ground.
I can't believe we're almost, like, when we got to film 50, which was Tangled, yeah, just seeing that, mm-hmm, 5 in front of it was like, it suddenly just like blew my mind of like, yeah, 50 is a big number. And it didn't really hit me until that point that we'd like watched and spoken about 49 films prior to that, and usually spent about an hour and a half or so talking about each one. So we go in depth, but there's a lot to get into in these films, and it's just been an absolute joy. I'm gonna be very, very sad when that series comes to an end, but I think we'll carry on doing something. Not sure yet, but watch this space. So
there's always Pixar.
Exactly.
Next that studio is run.
Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, of course, Jaws for a Minute, again, highly recommends, because yeah, you and MJ, previous guest, talking about previous topic that was on this show, it's like, I can't think of a more perfect show to recommend to the listeners of this one. So absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. And I look forward to speaking to you guys again soon. Hopefully I have you back on in the future.
Absolutely. Anytime.
And there we have it. Thank you so much to Sarah for coming onto the show and sharing your love of The Good Place. Definitely go and check out that series, guys. You can find it on Netflix pretty much anywhere in the world. And definitely go and check out Sarah's work over at Jumpcast and Let's Jaws for a Minute. Both shows are brilliant. I've put links to all of them in the show notes for you of this episode. Also, be sure to go and give Sarah a follow on social media. I've put links to all of that in the show notes for you as well. And I will be making a return on Let's Jaws for a Minute. At the time of recording, I'm not quite sure when that will be, but I will of course keep you guys updated, and hopefully that song should be finished. So definitely go and listen to that show and keep an ear out for that. A huge thank you to Alex Jenkins, as always, for designing the artwork. If you'd like to get in touch with him to commission your own logos and graphic design, all of his details are in the show notes for you. If you'd like to get in touch with me, then you can reach me on the social media links that I've put in the show notes, as well as email. It's fundamentalspod@yahoo.com. I would love to hear from you. Love to know what you're thinking of the show. If you've left me a 5-star review on your favourite podcatcher, then definitely tell me, because of course you earn a shout out on the show. And if you even want to become a guest on the show, that is very much an option that is open. At the time of recording, I have, I believe, 4 guest spots available for this sitcom summer series. And then further from there, I'll be back to normal, basically looking for all kinds of topics to discuss. So don't hesitate if you've got something you'd love to share with me and my audience. That is it from me. I'll be back again next week with another sitcom and another guest. And as per routine now, I'll leave a little clip for you at the end of this episode. So until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.
Just tell him how you feel without sounding like a girl for once.
I miss you so much it hurts sometimes.
Okay, you've had a rough day, so I'm gonna let that go for now.
Thank you.